The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, Champions League. Real Madrid, Man United, after Ronaldo's incredible leap, jumped up Portuguese earns headlines. For once, it's not the manager they're talking about. There's all the passion of Parker. A Juventus through to the next round? Is the Pope Catholic? Oh, hang on, actually. Plus, there's all the drama of Valencia, Paris Saint-Germain and Shakhtar Borussia. Marvellous, darling. Marvellous. Meanwhile, we give a quick nod to the inconveniently timed Europa League. We salute the returning FA Cup. And we look at your posts and tweets. All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. Valentine's special extra sexy Football Weekly Extra today with ladies love Cool James Horncastle.
Yeesh.
Yeesh.
Yeah, happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you, and to you too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Got a big heart.
Have you? Tom Lutz.
Hello.
Hi, Tom. How's your Valentine's Day been?
Great so far.
Good. It's only going to get better.
Yep.
And the man who gets more cards than Joey Barton, Pedro Pinto. Good Valentine's cards.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hi. Good to see you.
Yeah, and you too, Pedro. Who are you texting?
I'm not. I'm checking the FA Cup fixtures right now.
Right, of course you are.
As we speak. I am.
Oh, okay.
It's a true story. I wouldn't lie to you.
Right.
Not it's Valentine's kind of, Day.
Right, okay. Good. Here we go then. The Bernabeu. It was the game the world was waiting for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. James.
Yeah. No, I thought it was a decent game. Mm. And I was quite excited at the start because it was an attacking lineup from Ferguson, and much more attacking than I think many people expected. And yet United played in quite a controlled, very disciplined way. Yeah, they didn't allow Real Madrid to counterattack them, which is their sort of biggest threat. I was quite impressed with United, although I thought they could make, yeah, it was a good performance from them, but they could have maybe got better out of it because they had so many very good chances to score more than the one goal they did. Mm. You know, I'm thinking of Welbeck's cross from Van Persie, then the two Van Persie chances where, you know, he hits the bar and, yeah, he's through on goal quite improbably and he fluffs the volley. I think it's a decent result for them, but I think at the same time, I think Real Madrid will be quite, you know, like as Jose was saying afterwards, be quite encouraged because I don't think the away goal necessarily means much, really. Right. Again,
first name terms from James. You're another man on first name terms with Jose Mourinho. He seemed 100% confident.
His reasoning is that United normally concede goals. They concede them at home, and they've never faced anyone as strong as Real Madrid at Old Trafford. So I understand why he's confident. I think Real could have scored more goals at the Bernabeu, as could United. I was very impressed with the way some guys played for United on Wednesday night. Johnny Evans, Phil Jones, and Welbeck coming in.
And how about De Gea?
Very, very good.
Mm. 23 kid says David De Gea to sail back from Spain and up the ship canal on a raft made from tabloid hacks.
Well, I think it would have been particularly sweet for him because of his links with Atletico as well.
Right.
Yeah. I was watching it with my friend who's an Atletico fan.
Ooh.
And he was very, very excited. But I think what was impressive is that we all know De Gea can make those kind of spectacular saves that he did early on, but his handling was also very good. There was a Carrick deflected a shot late on, and that's a kind of shot that you'd expect him to get to usually, but quite often he spills right at the feet of the centre forward, but he held on to it, and he did look a lot more confident there.
Mm, magnificent. All right, well, as you say, Phil Jones and the rest, they did a very good number on Ronaldo largely, but there was nothing they could do about that extraordinary header.
Michael Jordan-esque leap. Unbelievable, wasn't it?
I think it was. I suspect in the future in basketball games, they'll be talking about Cristiano Ronaldo-esque leaps for the basket.
I'm sure he can dunk. I've never seen him do it.
Yeah.
I just think, yeah, I mean, that's such a strange quality of his game, isn't it? Because, you know, I mean, you don't expect a sort of a winger to spend, someone who has such ball skills as he does, to spend time, you know, making this. You know, real. I can't think of many better headers in the world apart from maybe someone like Falcao. Yeah, and he scored sort of. His career has to some extent also been defined by great headed goals. You think of the one he scored against Roma, the one he scored against Chelsea, which is almost identical in the Champions League final in 2008. yeah, it's something that is quite an accentuated part of his repertoire, isn't it, really?
He told me that goal against Roma is actually his favorite that he's ever scored. So I wonder if this one's going to nip that now, since it was more spectacular, perhaps, the leap.
Mm. Yeah. Of course, you've had the pleasure of speaking to both Real's Portuguese stars over the... Ronaldo
recently.
And Mourinho over the last couple of months. And how do you think Mourinho will be? He didn't look the happiest during the game. Afterwards, it was all, this is fine, this is according to plan, I expected this. What do you think he'll be thinking?
He was frustrated with the second half performance. He felt they were too slow. I know he wasn't happy with Karim Benzema. I know he's got an issue there with the centre forward at the moment, where neither of them are really firing on all cylinders, and there's too much pressure on Ronaldo to score every single game. I personally also think that, with the exception of that goal against Dortmund, Mesut Ozil has been quite average this year. Look, Real have had a pretty poor season, let's face it. They've had some glimpses of the Real of last year, but he's just trying to muster some kind of emotion from his players for the big games, and he doesn't understand how they can't be motivated enough to give 100%.
But do you think he got that reaction in this game?
From a lot of the players, I don't think they were close to their best, no.
Okay.
That's perhaps why he wasn't so happy in the second half, even though that result, as he mentioned, is good enough.
Okay, let's dial up Sid Lowe now in Madrid to hear what the Spanish are making of Wednesday's game.
Hello, Jimbo. How you doing?
Yeah, very well. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
Happy Valentine's Day.
And to you, my darling.
We don't have to take our clothes off to have a good time, Sid.
Is that a song? Who's that by?
Jermaine Stewart.
Oh, okay. Don't know it, I'm afraid.
I bet you do.
Yeah, it's you do.
Do I?
Yeah. We don't have to take our clothes off.
I can't sing. To have a good time.
Well, I'll tell you what, I definitely haven't got that song on my playlist.
Really?
The one you've just
Would you
done,
like
yeah.
it?
Oh, I'd love it, please. Yeah. Could you send it to me?
Okay. Sid, what's the word in the Spanish capital this morning after events at the Bernabeu last night?
I think the word is, it's still on. And it feels a little bit, from a Spanish perspective, like not a huge amount has changed, in the sense that I think this isn't as good a result, of course, as Real Madrid wanted. It's not as good a result, I think, as most Real Madrid fans and probably the players and the coach expected either. But I think there is a belief that Madrid are good enough, particularly on the counter, to score at Old Trafford. So it's certainly not been seen as a disaster. I think it's one of those where almost everybody's satisfied.
Right. What did they make of El Coco and his 5,000 friends, then?
Well, they... you know what?
What does El Coco actually mean, for a start?
El Coco means the bogeyman.
Ooh.
And El Coco means the bogeyman in the sense that this is the guy we're scared of. So, for example, whenever there's a Champions League draw, they talk about, you know, El Coco is the team you want to avoid. So El Coco in the draw might have been, in this case, Manchester United, or El Coco is Bayern Munich. You don't want Bayern Munich. I think an enormous amount of fuss has been made about that article about Rooney, completely unjustifiably. I think it was an article that was almost entirely eulogistic with a little bit of literary license thrown in. Mm. And actually, the reaction from certain Spaniards I spoke to last night, and it's something that they've seen before, of course, with the games against Barcelona. The reaction in terms of Rooney's performance was quite familiar. It was a sense of actually feeling a bit sorry for him, in the sense that they were like, God, look at this great player, and yet on the really big nights, he's almost always invariably forced to run around like mad trying to defend.
Right, Sayings McSayings making this very point. Can a loitering pod tactical brain please help me out? Why does Fergie always seem to accommodate Rooney into the lineup for big games out left, in midfield, and out right? Doesn't he rate him for the big European nights? Why doesn't Fergie set the team up around Rooney, assuming he is the main scoring threat, the El Coco, if you like? Pedro, you want to weigh in here, tactical brain?
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't think Rooney is the kind of player to be in the hole. He has some good games against average teams, maybe, in that position, but I still think he's an out-and-out striker. I think he's a great finisher, and I'd love to see him closer to the box, like Fabio Capello tried to do when he was England manager. It's tough to accommodate both him and Van Persie, but...
Is the issue, though, specifically last night, that they just didn't have the cover out on the flanks, and so that's why he was in for like a Valencia or a...
Well, I think there's that, but Rooney's also a victim of his own sort of attributes, I think, because he has this amazing sort of self-sacrifice, doesn't he? He gets to a lot of running, he huffs and puffs around, and yeah, he's willing to do that kind of job. So, yeah, I think that's why, yeah, Ferguson, he's quite useful in that respect. I think we should actually commend him for it. Because
I think that's exactly the point. I think with Rooney, and we saw this a little bit with Eto'o Inter very, very briefly, the point is, why does Fergie do that with Rooney? Because he can.
Right.
Because other players wouldn't perform as well, other players wouldn't accept it. And the reason I bring up Eto'o at Inter is that Eto'o did it for one season, but really didn't like it.
Right.
Really didn't like it and put up with it for a short period. Rooney seems to have put up with it for quite a long time now.
Right. Well, he also gets an enormous fat contract for it as well. So maybe that's fair enough. Sid, how's Rail's away record this year?
Pretty poor. Really quite poor. I mean, the drop points in La Liga have almost all been away from home. Not all of them, but nearly all of them. Particularly in the south, although, of course, Manchester United is very much in the north, and from the Madrid point of view, even more so. But in the south, they've been beaten four times that they've been down in Andalusia. They've tended to be beaten in similar ways. The Malaga game was slightly different, but the other games were the same. Teams sitting very, very deep, soaking up the pressure, not allowing them to create chances, and then hitting them on a break or hitting them with one-off goal from a corner or from a free kick. And actually, Real Madrid's problems at corners this year have been extraordinary, and it was yet another one last night, at which Mourinho very definitely pointed the finger at Sergio Ramos again.
Interesting. So Mourinho's kind of post-match line that, oh, this is all according to plan, everything's set up brilliantly for us in the second leg. Are people buying it there? Is the press buying that?
No, in the sense that they're buying it up to a point. They're buying it up to a point in so much as they think Madrid are good enough to go to Manchester United and win, or at least get maybe a 1-1 draw or a 2-2 draw, which of course will put them through. But they're not buying it in the sense that they're not buying it in terms of saying this was a great result and it was what we wanted. They know that Madrid's aim was to make sure they didn't concede a goal. That Madrid wanted to win the first game and to set up the second leg better and to condition it better for them. And that there is a slight risk. Mourinho also said something about how I don't think the British footballing culture will allow them to sit in their area and defend all game long. And I don't know if that was him expressing what he expects to happen or what he very, very much hopes happens.
Interesting.
I don't know.
No, one of those for definitely.
Yeah, linguistically, I seem to have tied myself in knots there.
Mm. Well, listen, Sid, you got any big plans for Valentine's then?
I don't think I have, actually, no. I'll be working all day, so it'll be tremendously romantic with me and my laptop.
Cool.
And I don't make the obvious next joke.
Wow.
We do have a special relationship.
Right, part two, and it begins with Ian McIntosh, who was all over that Shakhtar Borussia game. Ian.
Hello.
Hi, Ian. Welcome on board in a very real sense.
Thank you very much for having me.
Right, what a popular chap you were on Wednesday, there with your lonely vigil at the Donbass Arena.
Yeah. Well, less the Donbass Arena and more my spare bedroom with the backup skybox and a Leonard Cohen album and a cold cup of coffee.
Living the dream. So,
oh, isn't it?
Yeah, but you got a match to enjoy, though, didn't you, though? Was it a good one?
It wasn't too bad. Ah. It wasn't too bad. It wasn't. I think if we'd have gone by what the hipsters were expecting, it would have been 5-4 and ended with fireworks displays and doves being released into the sky. Instead, it was a curiously English affair. Lots of direct balls and bustling elbows and penalty box chaos. But four goals, that's twice as many as everyone else got. So me and the other 16 people watching, I think we did all right.
All right. As many as 16. Excellent. And, of course, it's a result, you'd think, that favours Borussia enormously, yes?
You would, obviously, with the two away goals, but also, I mean, there's an awful lot of talent in that Shakhtar Donetsk front line, and they will feel that even having a bad day at the office, they pretty much managed to cope with them. I mean, Mats Hummels did not have a very good shift. If you've seen the Douglas Costa goal, the second goal, for Shakhtar, you'll know that it was just a simple fourth division big hoof from Jagrinski in the back line, fully 50, 60 yards, and Hummels just sort of waved his head at it like a dog watching an ice cream van go past, allowing Douglas Costa to jump up and snatch the second goal. So even if they can survive on a bad night in the Donbass Arena, surrounded by partisan supporters, playing in what appeared to be conditions like a meat locker, you'd expect them to do a little better at home.
Right. Interesting.
Any horse meat? Yeah. Any horse meat in that locker?
Why like a meat locker?
I'm not sure what the temperature was out there, but you could see steam rising off the players. It looked like a rocky training session.
Of course, this is in the middle of the Ukrainian winter break, isn't it? So it's pretty good going from Shakhtar to hit the ground running like this.
And they started very well. They were certainly snapping into tackles as if they had a point to prove, because it's been, I think, a couple of months since they've played competitively. They've had a run of friendlies to try and keep them in shape, but you know, that's only going to do so much. So, I mean, Mircea Lucescu considered some of their defending to be childlike, which wasn't a glowing endorsement. But again, I think he'll be reasonably pleased to still be within sight of Borussia Dortmund.
Right, okay. I noticed in the match reports there was no mention of Mkhitaryan. We've recently been talking about players whose names you love to say, and I can't believe that Mkhitaryan never got a mention in that, because it is a delight.
I suspect no one wants to have to look up the spelling. And there's a lot of ill feeling in the press because he's ruined everybody's easy go-to metaphor. You can no longer say they are an Eastern European defence, the steel of Eastern Europe with South American silk. He's ruined it by being Armenian and being up front. So it's possible that. But it wasn't his brightest game, but new signing Tyson, who's come in for Willian, who has left, he put in quite a bright performance before being subbed off.
All right. A prediction, Ian, for the second leg?
I think Dortmund will probably do it with a degree of comfort, 3-1.
All right. Ian, many, many thanks for that. Ian McIntosh. Now, speaking of kind of swimming against the tide, Pedro, on Tuesday, when much of the world was enjoying the drama and passion of Parkhead, you were watching Valencia PSG. God bless you.
I've been sold on the brand of PSG.
Right.
I haven't watched that much of them in the French League this season. Ooh. So I thought I'd see what they could do against a reasonable side in Valencia to see how much work Carlo Ancelotti has done over there and whether he has a team now, because earlier this season he said, I don't have a team, I have a group of individuals, which begs me to question, well, what are you doing then? Mm. Lavezzi was really good in the first half. Lucas Moura has looked great since he's moved from São Paulo. He's really surprised me how quickly he's adapted also in the league, and against Valencia he was great. And then Zlatan did what Zlatan does, something incomprehensible. You never know what he's going to do. He had quite a quiet game, and then at the end, unfortunately, he got sent off.
So basically, they were 2-0 up and absolutely cruising, looking like they're probably going to make it 3-0. But then in stoppage time,
right after Valencia had got a goal back.
Right.
So seconds before the final whistle blows, in injury time already, Zlatan contests a ball in the corner in their offensive third, and decides to kind of lash out at Andres Guardado. It wasn't scandalous, don't get me wrong. He did stamp, though, a little bit on Guardado. The referee saw it as a dangerous play, and he sent him off. Completely needless to do from Zlatan, but it's either that or a bicycle kick from 35 yards, and on this occasion, it was that.
The great thing about it was he clashed with one player, he went body to body with him, and then Guardado came in, and he kind of led. And so there were just bodies all around Zlatan after it. So it looked like he'd
taken time added on for injury a bit too literally.
Yeah. So I think that played against him, because I don't think he actually made contact with Guardado. He did look like he was going to stamp on him, but he didn't. And then Guardado came, went down, made a lot of it. And I think Ancelotti said it was absurd. It was an extraordinary sending off.
Really?
And Raiola, obviously Ibrahimovic's agent, thinks the referee should have a four-match ban rather than Zlatan. Yeah.
Thanks for letting us know about that. So, but on the whole team front, because that's very much the issue with PSG, and indeed probably any team that Ibra features in, did they look like they have a cohesive unit now? And do they look indeed as if without Ibra in the next leg, and they'll also be without, of course, Verratti, whether they'll have enough for Valencia or the two ones maybe a little bit?
Maybe they'll get Beckham. Maybe he'll play in the second leg.
Yeah,
I don't think they're good enough yet to challenge for European honours. I wasn't too impressed with their cohesive unit yet. They have enough good players to win games against teams that are worse than them. But if they find a more balanced side who knows what they're doing at different periods of the game, I think they'll really struggle, because they're still counting on the individuals to make a difference on one-on-ones rather than having a scheme of knowing how to attack when they have possession and leading a counterattack as well. I don't see any kind of flow or too much style that has been branded there.
Right, well, of course, the other game, and I can't believe we've left this till last, was Brave Juve's brave, brave Night of Courage at Parkhead. Or the scandalous Italian defending that the referee somehow let La Signora get away with. I don't know, it depends on your point of view, doesn't it, really?
Well, I think that, I was saying to Pedro, I think the referee sets the tone.
If he blows
a whistle for that first offence, Juventus probably won't do it again.
Right.
And the reality was, Juventus came out for that game ready to play to the whistle, so to speak, because if you look at that goal, the first goal, Maschi scores, there's a little bit of a doubt as to whether it goes at the time.
Yeah.
Marchisio makes no doubt about it, smacks it in anyway.
Yeah.
He wants it beyond any doubt. Yeah. I think Tony Pulis would have loved watching that game.
Well, it was interesting because Pulis, one of the most famous, Big Sam's another one, famously puts a man on the keeper.
Mm.
And Conte obviously thought that's what Celta are going to do, specifically Hooper's going to try and obstruct or be in the way of Buffon. So what I didn't get, and apologies everybody, what I didn't get is why it's okay, and the commentators were saying he's perfectly at his liberty to go and stand wherever he wants, why it's okay for him to go and stand somewhere, but it's not okay for Lichtensteiner to stand in between him and where he wants to go. We didn't push him. Hooper's actually leaning into him, and then of course sometimes Lichtensteiner leans back, but it's a two-way thing, you know. I mean, Hooper's actually leaning into a man he then claims is fouling him. So I don't get that myself. Pedro, what's your view?
My whole view of the game was still about this mentality a lot of times in British culture, where if we work harder than the other team, we deserve to win, regardless of how good the other team is. But it's so unfair. We worked harder. We ran more. We pushed more bodies. Yeah, but you're not as good. And I think that's what happened. I think Juventus are a lot better. They proved to be a lot better. And look, Celtic already did really well by getting this far. And it was unbelievable they beat Barcelona, but they're not going to get that lucky every time. They give themselves a chance, but that chance isn't going to be converted every time because they're not good.
Well, I think the statistics bear that out in that Celtic had nearly twice as many shots as Juve, but hardly produced a string of saves from Buffon as well. But it was an interesting contrast between United and Celtic, actually, in that Ambrose played two days after he'd been in the Africa Cup of Nations final, and yet Ferguson chose not to select Vidic, who could have played, but because he'd played 3 days before against Everton on a heavy pitch, he said, and Ambrose, of course, ended up costing.
Right, well, the good news for Celtic is they can concentrate now on their league campaign.
It's tough. It's looking tough, isn't it? 83 points
but
ahead.
Juventus, the Italian press, a bit like the French press of PSG, actually, are saying, well, you know, maybe now they can do a Chelsea. They've got as many arms. Can you see Juve with a combination of tight defending, and remember, Chiellini's still to come back into this setup, and clinical counter-attacking play? Do you think they have enough to do a bit of a Drogba and co?
Well, I think they're better than Chelsea were at this stage
last
season.
Yeah.
So why not? But
interesting.
I mean,
interesting. They are now 17 games unbeaten in Europe. They went 400 minutes without... they've gone, 400 minutes without conceding a goal. And they've had four straight wins in the Champions League, you know? Interesting.
Now, I think the really interesting thing about this, though, was as you were making the point about Ambrose, Conte rested Asamoah. Asamoah came back from representing Ghana at the African Cup of Nations and said, look, I'm ready to play. And he said, no, I think you deserve some more time off. The big contrast yesterday was Juventus' main struggle this year has been converting the many chances they create. You know, I think they played Norgeland earlier in the group stages, had 33 shots and only scored once and ended up drawing. They had four shots yesterday and scored, on Tuesday, and scored three goals.
Interesting. Okay, well, that's enough Champions League, frankly, for now. We've got another four set of exciting fixtures coming up next week. Before that, though, there's FA Cup to get all het up about. And there's also a couple of posts. Here we go. Maud M3 talking about that topic. He says, I thought it was a nice touch by Gareth Barry not to celebrate after scoring his goal on Saturday. And, here's some listeners with wives or girlfriends. Well done to you. Wives or girlfriends, in fact, who let them listen to the pod or watch football. Homecomer and GFBHWO, who says, thanks, Holly. And Homecomer says, shout out to my fiancé on Valentine's Day, because, they have a partner and they're allowed to watch football. It's an interesting paradigm. Can it work, Tom?
I think it can. Obviously, that's the evidence.
Right? Well done to them.
Does the partner listen to Football Weekly?
No. Next. No, I think generally there's either a pair of headphones or in some cases I think there was blinkers. Like a blindfold. Right. Sounds quite kinky, actually. Yeah. I'm moving on. Right. Pedro, do you watch football with your partner?
Sometimes.
Right.
If the partner accidentally walks into the room and needs to pick something up.
Right.
I'll watch football with anyone who will want to watch it with me.
Okay. If you want to watch football with Pedro, what's your email address?
Not facilitating that information.
All right, then. Good. Funny thing about football, I don't know why we're on this topic. I actually like watching it myself without the commentary. And there's no disservice to it. Sometimes commentary is great.
Yeah.
But I find it does sometimes make me switch off a bit. It just kind of lulls me into this state where I'm just kind of... Because it does my thinking for me. I think that's what the issue is. With commentators, they do the thinking for you. So you just kind of... I end up thinking about other things like how blue the sky is, why the ceiling needs painting.
If you go to a match, you can avoid the commentary.
That's true as well.
Yeah.
There's that.
This week on the Guardian Audio Edition, from the Arab Spring to global revolution, why the protest movement is here to stay. The love of the chase. Are we hardwired to love running? And in our audiobook review, we look at dystopian science fiction from Hugh Howey in Wool and explore Charles Arthur's view of real-world technology in Digital Wars. To subscribe for free to the Guardian Audio Edition, go to audible.co.uk/Guardian. Or find us on SoundCloud and iTunes. The Guardian Audio Edition. A new way to get the whole picture.
Okay, it's the other Club Cup competition, Europa League, which we can't really discuss too much, Tom, sadly. Because by the time most people hear this, the games will already have been played. That's rotten, isn't it? You'd think they'd split this stuff up a bit, but they don't. Anyway, but I wanted to mention it just because you've got four... This is the bit where it gets interesting, isn't it? I was going to say there are four Premier League teams, which is a bit Brito-centric, but this is the bit where it gets interesting. Lots of big clubs involved. And, of course, your friend Andre Villas-Boas. Is he a bit happier now, one listener was asking? Is he happier now at Spurs?
Definitely. He is definitely happier. He feels like he has more control at the club and
right.
people respect him more than they did at Chelsea. And I think his experience at Stamford Bridge last year also made him learn about his approach with a kind of different culture of players, because it's very different in Portugal than it is in the UK.
In what way?
In the way that when he walked into the Chelsea dressing room, he was very much maybe the lower profile person in that dressing room in many aspects, whereas in Porto, the manager always has the backing of the president and the players always know that it's all about the manager and the president. And that's the culture in Portugal a lot of times, where you don't get as many egos playing a part in the dressing room as you do in the Premier League, and especially at a club like Chelsea. I think at Spurs it's been different in that way, and I know for a fact he's really enjoying the challenge, and he'd love to win a trophy this year to prove a lot of people wrong.
I bet he would. Arsene Wenger would love to win a trophy, and he's got the chance because he's still in the FA Cup. Yeah, that's right, listeners. You all across your FA Cup fifth round fixtures?
Straddling it.
I was checking the mirror.
All right. What leaps out and grabs you by the eyeballs and shakes you vigorously?
Luton Town, Millwall.
Right, this is the game that Tom's all hot about.
It's kind of, there is a Valentine's theme coming in now, isn't there? It's getting a bit racy.
Yeah, racy.
It was very racy when these teams played in the 80s.
Exactly.
It was a huge riot.
Yeah, but they've played since then. We don't need to dwell on the bad times.
No, I'm saying that's the Luton chairman, I think, was kind of on record saying Millwall have moved on, because just in case people don't know, there was kind of 40 arrests when they played in the in the 85, I think it was, the sixth round, and quite a few police were injured as well. Both these teams are actually in fairly bad form at the moment and haven't done that well. I think the only team... I think the only team Millwall have beaten this year since New Year's Day is Villa, which isn't even saying that much, and Luton.
Is that right? That's the only win they've had?
Yeah, I think they won on New Year's Day, and it's Villa are the only side they've beaten since. And then Luton, although they're kind of doing okay in the conference or Blue Square Premier, I think they've only scored twice in the last four games. So actually, these are two pretty bad sides.
All right. Facing each other. Maybe that's not the game of the round then.
But it's an interesting game, isn't it?
It is.
An interesting game.
Is Arsenal Blackburn, is that an interesting game? 7-1 the last time Blackburn visited the Emirates.
Yeah, I think they've. It should be quite interesting because since Appleton's come in at Blackburn, it's actually the first sort of common sense appointment that they've made, that Venky's have made. And I think they've won 6 of their last 10. Mm. And they've got Jordan Rhodes, who is on great form. I think he scored 9 in his last 10.
He's so on fire.
He's
on fire.
He's unplayable.
He is.
I think it'll be interesting to see him against a Premier League defence. Admittedly, Arsenal's defence, but
right.
He scored all those goals in League One and right. has continued in Championship, but I haven't seen him against a kind of...
Right, well, of course, they've got injuries to Thomas Vermaelen, Laurent Koscielny and Kieran Gibbs, and Carl Jenkinson suspended, so not quite sure who's going to be... And, of course, Andre Santos has left now as well.
Yeah.
So, plus, it's not just Jordan Rhodes, there's also DJ Campbell.
Yeah, he's playing well earlier in the season.
Mm.
They set
a goal up last weekend.
And they've strengthened.
A brilliant through ball.
Yeah.
If he became a DJ, would he change his name?
That's an interesting one. I don't know. Why would he do that?
I don't know.
Because it'd be kind of nominative determinism.
Yeah.
Yeah, which we like talking about, as you know, Pedro. Yeah. What if he became an MC? DJ MC? That would be confusing. Yeah, Ben, producer Ben, makes the point that if he became an MC, that would be confusing, though.
Yeah.
Right. So, with all of this, then, are we suggesting that Arsenal, who, let's face it, have had one or two problems in the Cup this year, being knocked out by Bradford and that, but this is their last chance of ending this year that trophy jinx?
Got Bayern in the Champions
League. I keep forgetting that every time.
But I think, realistically, probably aiming on this one,
right.
I'd say Blackburn are less of a challenge than Bayern.
It's a brave prediction, that one. Now, okay, good. But they've got Bayern a couple of days after this game. So that's going to weigh on Wenger's mind. What else you got? We've got Luton Town, Millwall, MK Dons, Barnsley.
Hmm? Oldham Everton.
Oldham Everton. Right.
Liverpool, of course.
But that was back when they had Paul Dickov. Did you just say he's gone?
He has gone.
I thought you said Liverpool got... Sorry, I was listening to myself, not you. Right. Oldham Everton, Tom.
Yeah, and it's strange. You sometimes expect a club to be on a high, obviously, after they've beaten a Premier League club in the FA Cup. But their manager, Paul Dickov's left. The current caretaker manager is not sure if he wants to take the job.
Really?
And they're in the relegation zone in League One as well. So I wouldn't be expecting... a shock there. It's kind of one of their greatest matches in years, and then the low afters, they seem to be on a bit of a come down after.
It's a shame, isn't it? 2 wins in the last 5, one of those of course being against Liverpool. Before that they hadn't done anything against anyone, so things have picked up a little bit after Dickov's.
Well, they beat MK Dons recently, which was a good result. So
3-1.
I think Moyes, hasn't he been knocked out by one of his teams, has been knocked out by Oldham in the past.
Ooh.
He was talking about on Monday Night Football where he watched kind of quite awkwardly Gary Neville dissect where Everton had gone wrong against Manchester United.
That was magnificent television, wasn't it?
It was really kind of
so. It was Gary Neville on Phil Neville in front of Phil Neville's manager.
It was Gary Neville, just basically saying, "Look, your fullback's far too high there. He's far too high," and you just felt, I don't know, it was really uncomfortable.
I'm uncomfortable
talking about it.
How did Moyes handle it?
Well, he grew into it after the analysis of Everton had finished, I think. It was just, I think even Gary was quite, on first name terms again, Gary was quite awkward with at first, but then he kind of, said, well, no, there you go. Should be doing that, David, should be doing that. But I don't know, it's that kind of difficult balance to strike between having, someone who's a current coach commenting on, on his own players in front of everyone. But,
right.
I mean, Moyes was quite careful, and he was at his best when he was asked sort of, about the best players he signed at Everton and that sort of thing. But it was just...
All right, and of course that was all in the course of their analysis of West Brom's magnificent 2-0 win over Liverpool.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about that caught people a little bit by surprise, didn't it? Mulumbu back from the Cup of Nations, and all of a sudden, bang, they're back to being
the Mulumbu
big team beating Baggies.
Partnership reprised. Because Liverpool had dominated, really, and then obviously Gerrard misses a penalty. It was just kind of classic Liverpool. It's pass, but no sort of end product. And Daniel Agger had a bit of a shocker on both goals, really. But I think it persists this sort of thing where Liverpool have still yet to beat a team in the top 10.
Very much so.
I think when Gerrard missed the penalty, you just set your stopwatch for when West Brom were going to score.
Yeah.
It's like.
But Lukaku, he before his goal, he'd had like some sort of George Weah against Hellas Verona kind of run from box to box, and then his goal was also exceptional. Sort of, you know, I just feel for him, because I think next year, you know, it'd be great for him to go back to Chelsea, and now he's got, whether Torres is still there or not, we don't know, but he'll have Barr as competition, you know. And I'm not saying they're similar players, but I think it'd be good if they could put some trust in him, because I think as a young player, you know, has he scored 10 goals this season?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, he's done really well.
Mm. All right, well, Liverpool, of course, involved in Europa League action as well. They're off in Zenit St. Petersburg, and best of luck to them with that one, which could be a tricky tie in all sorts of ways. There you go. In other FA Cup news, not really feeling too much excitement about this fifth round, but then we saw that about the last round, and look how terrific those games turned out to be. Amongst them, of course, there was that Chelsea draw at Brentford. Brentford at Chelsea this Sunday.
And what about Man City Leeds?
What about Man City Leeds? Leeds who beat Spurs in the last round.
Yeah. Yeah, they also looked pretty poor against, was it Chelsea in the Capital One Cup when they lost at home by, four or five goals?
They got hammered.
Yeah. I wonder how City are going to pick themselves up from what happened against Southampton, because they looked a shambles there. Mm. I just wonder whether that could be another kind of shock. But surely City at home would take care of business. I haven't watched Leeds enough this year.
I just think Leeds, there's a bit of turmoil at the club at the moment. There's the takeover, and now it reveals that the people who have taken over are maybe looking to sell a majority stake already. People thought, maybe we'll get some investment in January. They'll bring in some players. No, they didn't. They sold their top scorer, Luciano Becchio, to Norwich. You know, Leeds have become Norwich's feeder club, in essence. They're on quite a poor run. I think they haven't won since that Tottenham game. But interesting, I saw if you get the tram to Man City, I think now, to the ground, if you get the tram to City now, at each stop, there's a Manchester City player says,
yeah,
it's your captain, Vincent Kompany, speaking. You've reached Droylston or something like that.
They're recorded, yeah?
Yeah, they're all recorded. Right, okay. Well, yeah, obviously, they're not on the tram accompanying supporters there. But
that is interesting, isn't it?
Mm. Mm. Cool. They did that with a manager and a couple of players, didn't they? Mancini also.
Yeah.
I wonder what happens when he leaves at the end of the season.
Right, they'll have to re-record the message. Yeah. Well, it's an interesting shout you made, that potential upset. And Reading Man United, or Man United Reading, is that an upset? Where do you think the upset's going to come, Tom? Or all over the place?
I'd say anywhere it would be Blackburn Arsenal.
Really?
I think if Arsenal maybe fields a slightly weakened side with half an eye on the Champions League.
Right.
Not at Chelsea Brentford, I don't think. Now that it's at Stamford Bridge.
You think? Because their record there is so very terrific, of course.
Interestingly, they're both cup holders. Brentford are the current London War Cup holders.
Really?
Yeah, so in the Second World War, when they didn't have enough football, they had the London War Cup. And Brentford.
The London War Cup?
Yeah.
Right.
And Brentford beat Portsmouth in the final. And Portsmouth aren't even in.
So they
should have been disqualified.
Tom, that's an extraordinary story.
So they have to wait for another war before the title.
Yeah,
defense.
Thought the Falklands, they might have a chance, but it didn't happen.
Right, because we never actually were at war.
The war on terror, they were hoping.
Right.
Maybe they'd, but not a sniff there either.
Nothing. No. All right. My word, that's an extraordinary, extraordinary revelation on which to conclude.
Wikipedia is a good website.
Yes, it is. To conclude today's pod. Wow, can't believe it's over.
Can I ask for a shameless plug?
Please do.
Yeah?
Have you done another of your exclusive interviews?
No, but we've started a new football program on CNN, which is quite revolutionary. It's called the CNN Football Club. Every Thursday, talking about the Champions League with a star guest and interaction from all over the world. So if people want to participate, it's at CNNFC on Twitter.
Is it very interactive, this?
It is extremely interactive. Mm. We have fans from all over the world asking questions to our guests on Skype and live feeds. Twitter, Facebook, all of that.
Who's your star guest this
week? Our first one on was Michael Owen. We were supposed to have Michael Ballack this week, but he had an unforeseen injury to attend to. We've got actually one of my favorite players when I was younger, Gaizka Mendieta, is on with Gustavo Poyet.
All right, yeah.
And I like both of those.
Right, okay.
That's it.
Absolutely. Magnificent. Good luck with that, Pedro. Good luck with that, Pedro. And whatever. So that's your Thursday night sorted out.
Yep.
Yep. Good. And
a threesome. Threesome on. No.
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah.
Does that count?
I'm not right. With lots of people watching, hopefully as well.
Yes.
Hey.
Hashtag Rocco Siffredi. Sorry.
Yeah. No idea who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Good. That's about it for today. I should mention a little bit of business, that there is a pay-per-view of the Champions League action up on Friday morning, and Dave Farrar will be here next Monday doing the hosting business, because I'm away next week. So Dave Farrar will be here.
More strongest man?
Sorry?
More strongest man?
No, no. I'm going downhill fast in a very real sense.
Ah.
Yep. And so... have a super weekend and enjoy Dave bringing the knowledge next week. And many, many thanks to Pedro Pinto for being with us today.
Loved it as always.
All good. To producer Ben, to Tom Lutz.
Hi.
And James Horncastle.
Cheerio.
Have a super Valentine's Day, everybody. And I hope you feel the love. And see you soon.